This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now from the LA Times, Gary Klein. And Gary, I hope that you made it into town.
I made it into town. Just arrived, John.
So, fantastic.
It looks like nice Seattle weather.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I guess in a lot of ways there's a break. Now, I think there's going to be some rain tonight or something like that. Maybe a little bit is going to carry over. But the original forecast had it supposed to be like a quarter of inch of rain or something like that tomorrow. But I think it's going to ease up at least for the game, which, of course, that's good for me because being on the sidelines, getting a quarter inch of rain is not the most fun thing in the world.
I was kind of looking forward to it. I tell you, it's nice down in L.A., but 85 degree days in December, the holiday season, it's a little much. This is a little bit nicer holiday weather.
Tell you what, it's a lot different than the last game between the two teams, where the temperature was in the 80s, the humidity was high. Take us through how this team has kind of evolved since that loss to Seattle back in Los Angeles.
You know, John, that game really came on the heels of a Rams win at Dallas, where the defense under Wade Phillips really seemed to start coming together. And even though the Rams lost to the Seahawks that day, they were in that game 16-10. You know, had they not committed five turnovers, they really think that they would have had a shot, that they wouldn't have needed that catch or potential catch in the end zone to maybe knock off the Seahawks. So their confidence has only grown since then. On the defensive side, you know, on the offensive side, Sean McVay seems to have a system in place that really takes advantage of Jared Goff's talents. And so they've really played, well, better than I think anyone really thought they would be at this point. They're coming off a tough loss against the Eagles, but just the sense I get from the players in the locker room, especially the guys that have played the Seahawks before, is that they feel that this is a real shot for them, a real chance for them for maybe a changing of the guard or passing the torch, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, no question. Now, what happened? I mean, I know that there was the talk of this beforehand, but kind of did the crowd, how was the crowd on Sunday? Because I know that early in the week, Sean McVay was talking about using a silent count.
Yeah, you know, I was surprised. I get to the stadium really early. I mean, like hours and hours and hours early. And there were already Philadelphia Eagles fans in some of the parking lots around the stadium, quite a following. So I think, though, for the Rams faithful came out. They were very loud. Although there was a contingent of Eagles fans, it wasn't a situation where, you know, the Rams had to go to a silent count. Now, obviously, preparing for the Seahawks at CenturyLink, they've taken some steps, you know, just turning up their speakers, almost maybe blowing out their speakers, trying to get a sense of what it might be here. But the players feel like, you know, their trip to Minnesota and kind of the environment they were in there in U.S. Bank Stadium helped prepare them for what they're bound to face on Sunday.
So what kind of adjustments do you think, or what did he make Sean McVay do? Because obviously one of the things that he does such a good job of communicating before the 15-second cutoff, trying to make sure that Jared Goff has every piece of information necessary. But with the crowd and the potential crowd noise, how did he handle it in Minnesota, and what adjustments might he have to make in the game tomorrow?
Well, I think, you know, they attempted to do some things. I think the problem in Minnesota wasn't so much the sound, although that was an issue. They didn't have, if I recall correctly, they didn't have an abundance of false start penalties or anything like that. They just had a big mistake, a fumble on the 1 yard line at a critical point in the game that really turned it in the Vikings' favor. So I think at this point in the season, you know, they've got their systems in place for how they're going to do the communication, whether it's hand signals or one word or whatever. I don't think they're that concerned about it, although they know it's going to be an issue. And I just think the fact that, you know, Goff has played more games, he's more seasoned in that way, they have confidence that they're going to be able to get through this.
Because it's still going to be a challenge. And, you know, it's amazing that Goff has been as good as he has been on the road. I mean, because normally for a young quarterback, road games are difficult. And it's kind of amazing that, you know, most of their losses have been at home and not on the road.
Mm-hmm. He's really demonstrated some maturity. I think the people that, you know, wrote him off as a rookie that was kind of unfounded, obviously. I mean, he came in into a system that was not necessarily quarterback friendly with a staff that really didn't have the offensive mindset that that Sean McVay and this staff has. And so he's been able to flourish. And he's been pretty low-key, you know, from the time they drafted him. He hasn't been too high, he hasn't been too low. And I think he's just kind of, with experience, like anyone, he's gotten more confident. He's learned from some of his mistakes. He's still making them occasionally, but not. He looks nothing like the quarterback that was up here at CenturyLink last year on that Thursday night game, the week that Jeff Fisher got fired. That, I think if fans expect to see that player, they're going to be surprised, because he's just playing with a lot more confidence in a system that enables his receivers to get some separation.
Yeah, and what is it with what he's able to do to, I mean, what does he credit the biggest thing, aside from just the coaching of Sean McVay, as far as his advancement in this game?
Well, I mean, I think experience, just having been through it, you know, been out there on the field and seen some of these coordinators and what they're throwing at him. I think the disguises that maybe worked when he was a rookie aren't working quite as much now, but I really don't think we can underestimate how much of an impact McVay has on this. I mean, as you mentioned, he's in his ear, like any coach is in his quarterback's ear, but they really do try to maximize the time that McVay has to grasp the landscape before he really makes that final play call. And I think that helps. That takes some pressure off Goff. Andrew Whitworth on the left side has given him great protection. John Sullivan, a veteran center, has been an aid. So a lot of the issues that maybe a young quarterback would have in terms of worrying about who's coming around the edge, he doesn't have that anymore. And he also has a receiving core that is actually getting to the places they're supposed to on time. And all those things, I think, have contributed to his growth.
One of the things that I kind of marveled at the game down in Los Angeles is kind of the trickery that McVay has as far as the play calls. I mean, for example, a lot of decoys and a lot of diversions. I mean, trying to get Sammy Watkins down deep as a diversion, almost as a decoy, which, of course, I guess Sammy didn't like early in the season because he wasn't getting any passes. And then, the movement of Tavon Austin. How does that translate into road games like in Minnesota and Seattle?
Well, you know, I think when you saw him, John, that was early in the season. As they got in to the middle part of the season, you know, we saw Goff unleash a 60-yard pass downfield to Watkins. They were able to complete that. And then I want to say it was the next week, or if not a week or two after, he went deep to Robert Woods running down the middle of the field. So they've kind of evolved that way. I think they're getting that timing down. You mentioned Tavon Austin, who really, from a production standpoint, has been a non-factor. Other than that touchdown that he ran for against the Seahawks in that game, he really hasn't done much other than be a decoy, you know, whether it's on fly sweeps. But they really haven't given him much of an opportunity to catch the ball down the field. If you talk to Sean McVay, he'll say, look, he's a very valuable guy just in terms of being a potential threat. I'm waiting for the day, for Tavon's sake, I'm sure he's hoping it's coming, where at some point in the season he's not just a decoy and they get him involved. But to this point, he's really been more of a threat rather than someone who's producing.
Yeah, it's funny. I know as far as Sammy Watkins, I think he walked past me 5 times grumbling about not getting the ball. And then next thing you know, I guess within 24 hours, he was tweeting out his disgust.
Well, I think what happened was Torrey Holt, the former Rams receiver from those greatest show on turf teams, had tweeted something to the effect of, why isn't he getting the ball more? Or pointed out how many targets he was or wasn't getting. And I think Sammy actually was just responding to that. But, of course, it blew up, like you said. If you were down on the field, you heard it firsthand. But on social media, I think he was just reacting to that. Immediately afterward, he kind of downplayed it. But then I think it was when we were down in Jacksonville getting ready for them to play the on their way to Arizona, he said, a couple weeks ago I was not happy, but that's behind me and whatnot. So they have found a way to get him involved. I think he benefited on some level from Robert Woods' absence the last few weeks, that's raised the profile of Cooper Kupp, who's having a great rookie year, and that also has given Sammy Watkins more of an opportunity to be a go-to guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of funny. And that's the one thing that's great about doing the sidelines is that you get to see who's the complainers and who's not the complainers. one of the weird ones this was Bernard Hopkins. I think he caught like about 228 yards of passes against Seattle, and every time they threw to the right side of the field, he'd like, you know, what are you doing? He's like, you know, his arms are going up and stuff like that. It's really kind of funny watching the reaction, even though, again, he had a 200-yard game and he's still kind of wanting the ball a little bit more. Kind of crazy. One thing that's a surprise about this team, because and I'm obviously going back with Wade Phillips into the 70s, biggest Wade Phillips fan in the world. I'm surprised they're so bad stopping the run. What's been going on with that?
You know what? They have not been, let me put it this way, it's not like they just constantly get hit for, you know, that teams are grinding them down. What's happening is, in almost every game, or in most games, they're giving up a huge play. It happened against Jacksonville, it happened against New Orleans, it just happens. It happened against Minnesota, but it's not like they're getting pounded and pounded and pounded. I don't know if it's a byproduct of the fact that their pass rush is so aggressive that they're not filling gaps, that the linebackers are either overly committed or not where they're supposed to be. But the thing that Wade Phillips gets at, and on some level, you know, of course we look at this skeptically, but on the other hand, you know, he's right. He goes, the bottom line is how many points are we giving up? You know, and they want to be better at the run. They need to be better at the run. But in his mind, if they're not giving up touchdowns, then, you know, it's not that big a deal. And I guess until, you know, if Mike Davis, McKissick or one of these guys goes crazy, or Eddie Lacy gets a chance and runs for 300 yards, then it'll be an issue. But I think at this point, he's willing to live with that, with the trade-off being a good pass rush.
Yeah, I can understand it. I mean, that's why he's always in good perspective of how he evaluates things, because he's such a good coach and he's such a guy that's been able to do it. Now, with the cornerback injury situation, how's that going to affect this game?
Well, I think, you know, Kayvon Webster was starting opposite Trumaine Johnson, and it was unfortunate for him because he had his first interception in that game against the Eagles early, and then he ruptured his Achilles. So I think what's going to end up happening is they're going to rotate Troy Hill and Akell Roby Coleman through there, maybe Kevin Peterson, who was brought up from the practice squad a few weeks ago. The thing about that is, and I remember this from last year, when Troy Hill kind of ended up in the game, I want to say maybe because Trumaine Johnson got hurt, and, you know, Russell Wilson went right after him. I want to say like three plays in a row. So Troy Hill is well acquainted with Russell Wilson. But they're just going to try and, you know, make do with what they can on that side. Roby Coleman is really more of a slot corner. He has started on the outside on occasion, so he'll probably figure in that, just depending on, you know, how many defensive backs they have on the field. And then LaMarcus Joyner, who's playing safety this year, but played slot corner last year, is a guy they also could, I think, rotate in there if they feel like they need to.
Interesting. And, of course, boy, they still have Aaron Donald, who is just amazing to watch.
Yeah, I saw some comments from Russell Wilson this week, actually, you know, talking, saying that, you know, he might be the best. I don't know, maybe Russell says this every week, but he said he might be the best defensive player he's played against, just because of his quickness and because of how dynamic he can be as an inside pass rusher. So he's kind of the key to that defense. Wade Phillips has moved people around. Michael Brockers, who was from all of his career really a nose tackle, he's moved outside and played a little bit of end. You know, Robert Quinn is playing kind of as that stand-up pass rusher. So this is a group, at least on defense, those guys, Alec Ogletree, they've played against Russell Wilson over the last few years and have had, I don't want to say great success, but they haven't been burned big time with one of those Russell Wilson-type games. And I think they're confident that if they can, you know, kind of keep him in check a little bit, then they have a good chance.
Well, now, how have they sorted out the nose tackle situation?
Well, I just think it's the way that, you know, Wade's deploying these guys. You know, I think there was some thought when everyone heard 3-4, 3-4, does that mean Aaron Donald's not going to play off the tackle? Is he going to play over the center? And that was not going to happen. They've used Tanzel Smart, a rookie, in there. Brockers still will play there. But then they'll rotate in guys like Ethan Westbrooks, really, who was more of a, I think, a, you know, an end in the 4-3 situation. He's actually played quite a bit inside and says he feels comfortable at either spot. So, you know, Wade, like you said, he's been around for 40 years. You know, he knows all the tricks. He's going to figure out ways to get these guys into the best positions they can be. And with, as you mentioned, the exception of some of these gash runs that that they've given up, they've done a pretty good job.
No doubt. No, it's a fun team to watch. It's going to be a fun game. And, of course, now that you're in town, I hope you get a chance now that it's at least dry out there to get around and enjoy it.
Yeah, I do too. There's actually some former colleagues of mine that live up here. I'm going to get a chance to see them this afternoon and maybe this evening. But it's always great. This is a good city. NFL writers, even though I'm kind of new to it, have always said that Seattle's a great town to come to. And so I'm looking forward to the usual good time here.
Hey, Gary Klein, thank you and enjoy yourself. And thanks for joining us from the LA Times. I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, John, we'll see you out there tomorrow.
Okay. Gary Klein, of course, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rick in Gig Harbor. Hey, Rick.
Hey, John. Good morning. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's a first time calling. Pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you.
Hey, so I just wanted to talk to you really quick about the Rams special teams. You know, in the past few years with Jeff Fisher, when they didn't have such an explosive offense, I mean, it was such a huge point of interest every game. And I'm wondering, with how well they've been playing lately, if we still are paying enough attention to what could possibly happen with their special teams.
Well, I think that, I mean, particularly after last week where they gave up the big punt return to J.D. Makins, so I think I would have to think that they're going to be focused. And again, they have a very talented group of special teamers. I mean, you know, they've got Nico Thorpe as a Pro Bowl caliber guy, and you know, whether you start to go with Michael Wilhoit and Terrence Garvin and all that stuff. So I think that they'll be pretty focused, but also they have to kind of watch out. John Fossil does a very creative job with what he does with their special teams, and so they have to be on guard and make sure they don't get trapped into some things, because I mean that's happened off and on through the years, particularly going against John Fossil and going against the Rams. So yeah, they have to pay special attentions right now to special teams.
And do you think we can expect any trickery?
Of course. I mean, that, although the one thing is, I mean, if you get too tricky in a loud place, that could tend to work against you. And but I would have to think that they'll have a trick or two up their sleeve. I mean, they always do.
It does seem like it. It always keeps it interesting, and it always makes for a really exciting rivalry game.
Oh, yeah, it's a good rivalry. And you know, now that you can see this team is really built for the future and built for now, I mean, this team's going to be a handful, because, I mean, you know, and that's why this team has to win on Sunday, because if it doesn't, all of a sudden now the Rams take control of the division and can take control over it for a period of time.
And do you think the rivalry has really shifted to the Seahawks and Rams in our division?
I think still it's Arizona and then the Rams, but I think you can see there's a shift. I mean, there's not the juice that's in the San Francisco series, because San Francisco has been so bad. And so, yeah, but I think it's going to start to enhance itself, and tomorrow I think it's just going to be another escalation of it.
Absolutely. How are you feeling about San Francisco next year?
It's going to be a long year. It's going to take them some time. They just, I mean, you know, when you think about the fact that they have 38 new players on the team, you know, a bunch of, some of the guys are a little bit older that they're not going to have back. I mean, it's just going to take a build-up. And I think they made the right move with Jimmy Garoppolo. I think that he's going to be a good one. So far, so good as far as his quarterback play. They've got to rebuild the wide receiver position because they're pretty void there. I think they have some spots to fix up on the offensive line. So it's going to take a couple years, and they know that.
And well, it's great for us, but I'll be looking forward to seeing how it progresses.
Yep, that will be it. Hey, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Dylan in Tacoma. Hey, Dylan.
Hey, John. First time caller.
Well, appreciate that. Thank you.
On. First of all, I want to give a shout-out to Flying Tomato and Graham. Great place.
Okay.
I just want to talk to you about it seems that national media like Chris Sims and fans around the league are trying to delegitimize what McVay and the Rams have done. Being that he's in his ear up until 15 seconds at the play clock.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to ask you if you think that's fair.
I think the criticism is unfair, Because, I mean, let's put it this way. You judge things by the results. And the results are, with the play of Jared Goff and the communication that Sean McVay is able to get in a very complicated offense, that they are 9-3 or 9-4. And so because of the fact that they are so successful, it's like to criticize that, I think, is wrong. I mean, again, everything that Sean McVay does is legal. There's not one illegal thing that he does.
Exactly.
The cutoff is at 15 seconds. And, you know, if they are criticizing what Sean McVay is doing, what they need to do is copy what Sean McVay is doing, because he does it so well that, again, you can take a spread quarterback like Jared Goff and after an 0-7 start last year, make him a 9-4 quarterback. He deserves applause, not criticism.
Exactly. No, I completely agree. And it just seems like that's a battle cry for what seems to be Seattle fans for their unfortunate season they seem to be having with the injury bug.
Well, man, again, this is the commentators, not the Seahawks. The Seahawks aren't criticizing Jared Goff. There doesn't seem to be...
Well, it just seemed like a fan earlier was saying that, you know, Jared Goff isn't even, you know, he's practically not the quarterback. It's McVay out there is what it seems to be the narrative. But another point, if the Rams do make a deep playoff run this season, could the narrative switch to maybe this is a new Brady-Belichick era in McVay and Goff?
No, I can't see that. I mean, let's put it this way. Obviously, Jared Goff has done a good job, but I think comparing him to the greatest quarterback of all time is a little much. And right now, I think that Sean McVay in his first season is showing himself to be one of the best, brightest young coaches in the league. But now to compare himself with the best coach maybe of all time or one of the best coaches of all time, way too early to go into that one.
Right.
That one I don't buy.
Just want to throw it out there. Just, you know, people like to throw narratives out. Might as well start another one.
Yeah, that one, I don't see any validity in that one. But let's put it this way. I have the highest respect for Sean McVay and what he's done. I've said that since meeting him at the Combine in Indianapolis, and I'll continue to say it because he's that good.
Yeah, no, it should be a very interesting game this Sunday. I will definitely be there, and go Rams.
Okay, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jermichael. Hey, Jermichael, how are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Oh, yes. John, I would ask you a question. How dumb is Malik McDowell?
On a scale of 1 to 10, right now I'd probably put him in an 11.
I'm just like, I'm baffled, John. I honestly believe that his injury is the reason why the roster and the salary cap and everything is just shut the way it is. I honestly believe that if the Seahawks don't make the playoffs, I honestly believe that he is a major part of why if they don't this year.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't go that far. Obviously, he's a disappointment. I can't guarantee he'll even be with the team next year. We don't know about that. That's something to be judged later on. But I'll tell you what out of this may have come out to be better. Now, I know it's hurt maybe the future because it costs draft choices. But, you know, were it not for the Malik McDowell accident on the ATV, were it not for that one, they wouldn't have probably traded for Sheldon Richardson. Because remember, they traded for Sheldon Richardson because, you know, defensive tackle. And Sheldon Richardson has been, I mean, can you imagine this team now without Sheldon Richardson?
Actually, no.
Yeah, so it's like out of that, it got them Sheldon Richardson because not having that one big defensive tackle that can kind of open things up. And look what it's opened up. Here's what I thought would happen. Now, I'm kind of surprised Sheldon hasn't had the sacks, but he's been so good at what he's done. But what he's done is that he'll draw enough double-team blocking that it opens things up for other guys. Like, I thought it would open things up for Michael Bennett when he's in nickel. Certainly now Michael Bennett's leading the team in sacks and having a great year. He and Frank Clark are having a great year. But Sheldon Richardson has been a big impact player. Were it not for the Malik McDowell accident, I don't know if they would have made that trade for Sheldon Richardson.
That's true. But what do you think? So if they don't win this game on Sunday, John, do you believe our season's over?
No, it's not over, but I think their chances of making the playoffs, I would go more thumbs down than thumbs up. Because, yeah, they were at 8 wins.
You need to get to 10. you think we should shut down Russell and, like, try to play for a good draft pick if our season's over?
No, because you're not going to get a good draft pick. Because at this stage, with 8 wins, I mean, you're going to be, you know, in that top 20, but it's going to be more toward the 20 than that anything else. No, that would be the absolute silly thing to do. You can't, because you're not going to get a better draft choice out of it. I mean, you need to get to the playoffs. You need to continue this run, and that's why winning is so important. Because if you don't make the playoffs, then all of a sudden you're adjusting what you're doing as far as you know, the run of this team.
That's true. And honestly, this is what I honestly believe, John. I believe Seattle needs to change our philosophy. Like, I believe that we should be, we're more of an offensive team now than we are a defensive team because of the people that we lost. So I think that Bevel should, I mean, this is what I don't understand. When Bevel was in Minnesota, like the type of stunts, the things they were running, I wonder how come they're not running that, like these like trick plays and things they're doing in Minnesota.
Well, they have a trick play or so. I mean, you've had a couple options and triple options and things of that. You've seen that in the last couple weeks. I mean, you can see some of the creativity on getting the ball out when J.D. McKissick is out there and some short passes and some trickery type plays like that. I mean, he's had trickery, and he's, you know, I think he's I mean, as much as people want to criticize, when things don't work out, the easy, you know, you either do one of two things in a town. You know, you blast the quarterback, which you can't do here because he's an MVP candidate, or you blast the offensive coordinator. Well, again, the coordinator's not executing the plays. The coordinator's not executing the running plays. And when you don't have the running game, which they haven't had, then you have to make adjustments. He's made adjustments.
I mean, like, how come they don't use, like, what's his name? Tyler Lockett, like they use Percy Harvin. I mean, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, getting creative like that and
they do.
Pulling out those kind of plays.
They do. They usually use like they do 3 plays a game like that, at least. I mean, Tyler Lockett will come over and either take a jet sweep. You've seen him do that. I mean, they did it last week. I'm sure they'll do it again this week. They do that. It's just that, you know, it's not as often. And remember, it's like if the blocking isn't there for the run, then you're not. That takes so much time to develop a play like that. It's going to turn into a negative play more than a positive play if you do it too many times.
Yeah, and one last thing, John. Have you heard anything about Chris Carson?
The latest is that they think there's a chance he may be able to be back for the finale against Arizona.
Okay, cool. Thank you, John. I appreciate your time.
All right, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Sam in Olympia. Hey, Sam.
Hiya, John.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
A privilege to talk to you, sir. I've been listening to you for many years.
Well, thanks.
And you are the best NFL analyst that there is out there.
Well, thank you so much.
I very topical for me. I know you don't talk much about the NHL, and in fact, your screener reminded me of that painfully. But I was just down in Las Vegas, just came back yesterday. I went down to see the Pittsburgh Penguins play the Golden Knights.
Mm-hmm.
And the atmosphere around that game and the atmosphere in that city around that, around their hockey team, although there were probably 20,000 Penguins fans in there too, it was just amazing. And I know that we don't have a team in Seattle yet, but I was just I wondered about. I know you're a hockey fan as well,
right?
And I'm just kind of wondering about your take on how Seattle will react as a hockey city if, in fact, we end up getting a team.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good because, and again, understanding that you know, I was in Pittsburgh. That's where, and I covered Penguins, some Penguin hockey and all that stuff. I go back even watching AHL hockey when they were the Pittsburgh Hornets, and so have a long history about. And of course, when I moved out here in 1986, one of the thrills was the fact that they were trying to go for the Stanley Cup, and I was able to watch Hockey Night in Canada, which is something
right.
we didn't get in Pittsburgh. And it's like, wow, this is phenomenal. So you know, and I miss hockey. And so getting hockey back is going to be great. And where I think this town is going to revel in it is that, one, you know, the city itself and the whole area, you know, more than 50% of the people from out of town. And a lot of them
right.
probably came from hockey backgrounds. And so I think
yeah.
that will help. Certainly, it's going to be a great destination sport because, you know, other than, say, college basketball, it's the only professional sport right now that you can – I mean, you got NBA, you got, you know, the Storm – and little else, I mean, yeah, you have soccer and all that stuff, but I'm talking about an indoor arena type stuff. That'll be the second pro type thing that now you're able to go. And so that'll be good. And I think it'll be a good venue. So, I mean, maybe difficult to try to get to parking and all that stuff. But, no,
right.
I think it's going to go very well.
Yeah, no, that atmosphere around, and maybe that's unique to Vegas too, but they had, it was like a what do they call it, tailgate party with thousands of people out in front of the T-Mobile Arena, and the atmosphere inside the arena, was, it was like a rock concert. And hockey, if people watch it and understand it, you begin to understand what a fun sport it is to watch, just how fast it is, and the teamwork involved. And, well, as a hockey fan, you know what I'm talking about.
Right, exactly. Because, I mean, there's such – and there's nuances to the game. I mean, I think the thing that's still kind of bad about it right now is there's too little scoring. I mean, they've got to find a way to loosen it up. I don't know how they try to do that, but I think that's going to be necessary. But, yeah, scoring right now is a little bit of an issue. But the sport itself is just fantastic.
Well, scoring in particular for my beloved Penguins is an issue right now. They're on a three-game slump.
I know. That is not good.
No, it's not. But we have two Stanley Cups in a row, and we're going to be champs till they take it away from us.
That's correct.
All right, John, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ron in Puyallup. Hey, Ron.
Hey, how you doing, John?
I'm doing great.
Good. Hey, I just had a quick question. What do you think the chances are that Seahawks rush over 100 yards against the Rams this weekend?
If they get 60 yards from Michael Davis, they can do it. And I think if he can stay healthy, you know, he's going to be, you know, playing with some sore ribs, but he's going to be playing. I think they can do it because, again, they'll get, you know, 35, maybe 40 from Russell Wilson. The key right now is Michael Davis getting 60 because then they can try to add to it. You know that, you know, a couple big plays that the Rams give up give the opportunity because they give up more than 120 yards. So I think they have a chance.
Okay, good. And if they do rush over 100 yards, how do you think that increases their chances of winning the game?
Very much so. I mean, the key is they can't be trailing much in the first half. I mean, they can't let the Rams offense get off to the fast start because regardless, if they get the 100 yards and the 60 yards for Michael Davis and all that stuff, you know what's going to end up happening is that they're not going to be able to, you know, get the, you know, you know they're not going to get that first touchdown drive. They need to come out. They need to get a field goal drive to start the game. They need to at least, you know, either be with the lead or close to the lead, you know, taking it into the second half, you know, get that little bump that Russell Wilson gets in the latter part of the half where, you know, he gets a quick drive and then come out, you know, get the second half kickoff, try to drive. I mean, if they manage the game that way without the mistakes, that's how they can win. Very much like the Philadelphia Eagle game.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. Thanks, Ron. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
And our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show and producing the show. And, of course, no show next week because flying to Dallas. And, of course, we got the holiday coming up. We will be back New Year's, right before the start of New Year's on Saturday. And 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor, how are you?
Hey, John, another great show.
Well, thank you.
Hey, a couple quick ones. Sirius, anytime coming up?
It was weird because, you know, I got a call last Friday to do Saturday, and I wasn't able to do that because I was flying to Jacksonville. And so on Thursday, I got a quick one to fill in, but then I had three things scheduled I couldn't get out of, you know, some hits. And so I'm kind of on call here, so it's sometime here in the next week or two. But I had two this week, unfortunately, not able to do them.
That's a shame. John, next year, Denver team, what do you see that's going to be changed on the high-priced players? Do you see any of them restructuring or just getting the boot?
You know, I'm kind of wondering, are they starting to tire of Aqib Talib? I mean, you know they're going to stay by Chris Harris. You would figure that they're okay at linebacker. I mean, they got to make some changes on the offensive line. I mean, they bring in Ron Leary. They bring in Menelik Watson. They're both on the injured reserve list. So, obviously, those things did not work out. So, I just think that, but the big thing is they've got to figure out what to do at quarterback. I mean, do you go young? Do you go old? Whatever it is, they've got to do something.
Yeah, the quarterback situation is definitely troublesome. I mean, you can't just take samples off of one game like the way Brock played on Thursday night, even though he has probably, I guess, played the most consistent. But I don't want to see them throw away another draft pick early in the first round next year on a quarterback, especially after what happened to Paxton Lynch. And
that's why I think they'll
exactly
go veteran.
What's going on.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's like, okay, their last move was to go young. And, I mean, I'll tell you what, now, this may sound bad, and forgive me if it sounds bad. Okay, you figure they'll look at Eli Manning. But don't you get the feeling they'll go for Tyrod Taylor? Because remember, they wanted him a couple years ago.
Yeah, they did a couple years back. But, I mean, they're, with the offensive line the way it is, they're going to need someone who's mobile.
That would be him.
I'd like to see. I mean, I know this is off, one off. I'd rather them try to use that first-round pick or some of their picks to solid, make the team a little more solid, like the offensive line, maybe a couple more playmakers, and get another run with maybe a free agent quarterback or with Brock. Or I doubt Paxton has a future there, right, the way he's looked. I don't know if he can improve that much to read a defense. But, I just can't see him going into it next year with another mid-round quarterback pick selection.
Yeah.
And then one quick one. Do you think this is Charles' last year with the overload of running back in Denver?
Yes, I do think so. Yeah, because I just think that, you look at it and it's like, okay, he did some things, but he's just a backup. And he's an older backup. And, it's just, I think it's time to move on.
All right, John. Hey, you have a Merry Christmas, John. Take care.
Dre, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Dre. Dre, how are you?
Hey, John.
Oh, this is a different Dre. Sorry about that.
No, this is Dre from Maple Valley.
Okay.
Yes, Chicago.
Dre.
Listen, I wanted to talk to you about Devin Hester retiring this week. It was a big debate on ESPN 1000. Kermit Yurko say no. Waddle and Sylvie say yes. Bill Polian and Peter King say yes. I say yes. So I'd like to know your opinion about that. And then second, was last week Mitchell Trubisky, was that the product of a Bengals team that lost this mojo, played an ugly game in Pittsburgh? Was that the product of that, or is he improving?
He's improving, but I don't know how good he really is. I think they made a mistake by putting him in this year because I think that, I don't think they haven't done damage to him, but I don't know if it's really, it's gaining confidence because he gets loss after loss and all that stuff. And so he's done some good things, but again, he's not a 200-yard thrower. They really protect him a little bit too much, but they don't have anything at wide receiver. How do you get better at a quarterback when you just have nothing at the wide receiver position? That's why I thought maybe it was ill-advised to put him out there, but at least you're able to see what he's able to see. It's just a mess. It's just not good. I think that they've got some progress on defense and no progress on offense, and it's a team right now that it's hard to watch. I mean, again, you'll watch it this afternoon. It's like, are you impressed? Now, as far as Devin Hester, it's not going to be easy. And I say that because when you're talking a special teams player, I mean, you're talking 7-8. Now, again, he's one of the greatest ever. But look at Steve Tasker. Steve hasn't been able to make it. And, would you take an 8-time Pro Bowl offensive lineman like a Steve Hutchinson or a Kevin Mawai, a 100-sack defensive end, a Randy Moss, Terrell Owens over Devin Hester? And that's where the problem we face. That's why it's hard to get a specialty type player in there like that, because again, he's more special teams than he is in that. So he can make it. He's deserving to try to get the attempt to make it, but it's not going to be easy to get him into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Hey.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Professor.
Great. Thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to John in Seattle. Hey, John.
Hey, John. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. I have a question for you, or actually a comment, and I want you to comment on my comment.
Okay.
So I'm a big San Diego Chargers fan, and yes, I said San Diego Chargers. They have no business in L.A.
Okay.
But they are, so it is the way it is. Question is, they went on a big resurgence after they started letting Phillip Rivers in the passing game set up the running game instead of it seemed the other way around. Have the running game, try to set up the passing game. With all that offensive talent in the receiving corps, I'm curious as to your thoughts of what took them so long to finally realize that they should use the passing game to set up the running game instead.
I think, you got a new coordinator not a new coordinator. I mean, Ken Wisenhunt's been doing it for a long time, and he's very experienced there. I think that, you're still trying to, there was going through some injury stuff with the wide receivers early. Now I think that's all settled down. And I think what it comes down to, you just find your personality. I mean, a lot of teams, Seattle, for example, they're still trying to find what their personality is and what they are on offense. It took a while for the Chargers players to do it. And when you get off to the 0-4 start, I mean, you're so discombobulated, you think everything's going wrong. Now, I think, one, the competition's not been that tough. I mean, they've had, you know, easier type games because they're in the AFC. And then secondly, I think that you can see Phillip is starting to get hot at the right time. And so offensive line problems, because remember, they lost a couple offensive linemen starters early as the season started. So that worked against them. But I think they're just kind of finding their way and they're getting confidence. I mean, you know, the two teams that I thought were going to improve this year, and I'm not saying this now in retrospect, I've said it all through the offseason, was Philadelphia and the Chargers. And the reason is both teams were so bad last year in close games, normally those teams improve. The year before that, it was Tennessee and the New York Giants. You saw what happened to them last year. So now the Chargers were 4-9 in the close games, one possession or less. And then, of course, this year they get off to a 2-5 start. Now they're doing better in the close games. They're doing better in games in general, and they're finding themselves. They have the best defense of the three teams competing for the NFC West, AFC West. Determine how they do tonight will determine how they'll do overall. Thank you for the phone call, and thank you, everybody. And again, no show next week, so I'll be back at the the Saturday before the New Year's. And, of course, I'll be here, of course, every day, Monday through Friday from 10 until 12. Lots of stuff coming ahead. Big game tomorrow. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.